Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, welcome again here on Circles of Change. Listeners, get ready to get your motivation moving as we're going to speak now with Diane Dolinsky-Picard of Mojo40.com. Good morning, Diane. How are you today?
I'm great, Zara. How are you doing?
Terrific, and we're so glad to have you as a broadcast partner now joining us once a month. Just a brief reminder for those who haven't met Diane before that she herself is a career shifter, having moved from being in the digital marketing world within organizations to now being a solopreneur and having the joy of launching a very interesting blog that has, I think, inspired herself as well as now countless others. So please take note. We're going to be referencing her material. It's out at www.mojo40.com. And Diane, just as a brief intro before we launch into our subject, how'd you come about the idea of doing this?
In fact, actually, I was out of work and I met a woman I knew back in college 2 decades prior. She was in a similar situation. We had had great careers, but we were in pause mode. And we said, instead of just job hunting, we ought to get out there and take some initiative. And that idea started to get fleshed out around the idea of blogging. And blogging for a market we knew well, which was professional, career-minded folks over the age of 40, and how they can get their motivation and get their career mojo on.
Isn't that great? And it's been, let's see, has it been over a year yet that you've been up online?
Oh, yeah. We're coming up to our two-year birthday candle.
I love it. That's great. Well, our topic today with Diane is going to be the tips and tricks to fast forward your career, because, you know, actually, before you can fast forward, though, you got to get unstuck. And Diane, why don't you make some just thoughts, this idea of the kind of blocks that you've seen people kind of get themselves trapped into?
Absolutely. You know, there are different kind of blocks. Some people's biggest obstacle are psychological. You know, they may be too shy to network. Some are physical, you know, they can't get out of the house at the times they need to network. Some represent misdirected energy. But one of the most common blocks I see are folks who overlook opportunities that come at them because the opportunities are coming in a form that's unfamiliar.
And what do you mean by that?
So, for instance, people know you can look on job boards, the Monster, the Career Builder, you can look on LinkedIn. But here's the reality. Most of those jobs are filled or they don't even exist.
And you know what? People need to hear that. Let's repeat that again. Is that many of those jobs that are on job boards don't exist, or they've already been filled, or they're going through the motions for some internal process?
Absolutely. Everyone knows a story of a hiring manager who had to put the job up after they had an internal candidate just to cover their tracks that they looked at other people.
Mm-hmm. Right. So not all, but certainly there's a preponderance of that. So what our advice to people is, don't rely on that as the 100% way to get access to opportunities.
Exactly. You know, but I would propose something else. Many roles with real potential to be filled by a job hunter or a career changer are not posted at all because they're not fully formed in the mind of the hiring manager. So let me explain. Really, the best chance to come on board a company is when the company has a vague sense that a role needs to be filled. Okay? Then they task someone internally to spend 20 minutes a week on that task, or half a day, or whatever. It's a helter-skelter effort, and somebody along the way starts to intuit they're not going to get dramatic results from sort of adding yet one more responsibility to an overworked employee. And the point is, if you can network to get in front of people who have some real power to shape a new role, a role that will be pinned on the shoulders of someone they hire, then you can pitch yourself as the right person to get that initiative off the ground.
And in fact, you can many times influence the writing of the job description, can't you?
Oh my gosh, 100%. You know, I don't know which story to tell you, but there are people who literally say, send me your resume so I can craft the job description.
By the way, that happened to me about 8 years ago for a very senior executive position. And absolutely, it turned right around. You know, how hard was this going to be?
Right, right. Well, I also, Zara, it's happened to me too, but let me give you a, what I would call, you know, a first-person account.
Sure.
Which is applicable to listeners out there who are having trouble landing that full-time job and have not really walked in the door of what could be a freelancing opportunity. So this is how it happened. I walked into a firm. The firm has 65 employees. It's a company that's been around 30 years, so it's not a fly-by-night. They had an employee doing social media and online marketing from time to time, but that was, once again, an aside from her main focus. They also had a vague sense that their social media marketing needed to be stepped up. I mean, you do a little research before you meet somebody, and what I had found in their case, their Facebook business page had 93 likes. So, I mean, let me say, in this day and age, even the picture of your best friend's dog on Facebook.
That's right.
93 likes, right?
That's 93 likes, yeah, that's right.
Exactly. And then I took a look. Their competitors were way ahead of them. So I was prepared at that face-to-face to listen. And here's what I was listening for. A sign that the executive whom I would be speaking with was also aware that their efforts were flagging.
So really what you're trying to do is offer opportunities to deal with whatever pain that they're feeling.
Exactly.
And that's often not communicated in the boilerplate job descriptions that are out there.
Exactly. In fact, most of those boilerplate job descriptions are wishing on a star lists of everything in the world you could ever want.
And they're not contextual specific, right? They're a list of skills necessarily, but not the problems or the opportunities that this person could really bite into.
Exactly. And then there's no context of really what's happened before, what they've tried and tested before they posted the position. That's why the face-to-face is crucial. But there's also the point where a person has to know what questions to ask in that face-to-face when they have an inkling that there's an opportunity. Would you like me to go over some of the points they need to learn in the meeting in order to take it to the next step?
I think that's a good idea. And we also should keep in mind what Diane is laying out to our listeners here is this could be a strategy for you to become a part-time employee or a freelancer first before getting the opportunity in. So how can you frame up your proposal of becoming a trusted server to that company that in time can flip into a full-time opportunity, right?
That is exactly it, Zara. And in fact, I think especially for older workers, that is the most likely way they're going to land on their feet.
And in fact, it might be the best way for you too anyways, so you can test drive that organization to see if it's the right match for you, bringing your skills and experience from prior opportunities forward.
Absolutely. Because, you know, a match means that you're going to be happy there, too.
Right.
And you really can't judge the work culture by coming in and out for 2 hours on three occasions.
That's right.
So let me outline a couple of things. First of all, you do want to hear generally and let them talk freely about the problems that they face. But you also want to outline the top three goals of what would be a consulting gig, a freelance gig, part-time, call it what you will. In other words, the outcomes that they want to see in order to measure success. And you want to be able to align your proposal so everything rolls up to those outcomes. You know, your tactics meet the objectives, mm-hmm. and you meet the goals. Number two, you want to determine in that meeting whether you're going to charge on a time basis or a project basis for the work. That's very important. You have to know enough about what they need. Because if you come at it the wrong way, they might be surprised. You actually may blow your one shot. And you also need to have, in general, an approximate idea of how much time it would take so that your proposal, again, is in line with their objectives. You don't have to pin a number. It could be an interval. And then the third part, I have to say, generally discuss what resources they're going to put forth to support you as you propose this.
And by that, you mean not just time and money, but what other people you would need access to? Could I have a computer system at your base tied to the nature of the work?
Exactly, because here's the thing. If you have the conception you're going to work at home on your bunny slippers on this project, and they have the conception you're going to be available 20 hours a week whenever they need to call you into a meeting, that gap is going to come back and haunt you in your proposal. Not only of which, you actually have a further objective, or let's assume you have a further objective, so you want to be sure that they're going to really be a true collaborative partner, for instance, if you want to be able to work with their people, if you want to be able to access their database and so forth.
And again, your longer term objective indeed might get be to have the opportunity to then craft this role to become full time or to get further follow on projects.
Exactly. In other words, you may not really long term want to be a solopreneur, but getting yourself in the door will enable you to prove yourself in front of them, and you will be then in a much a more powerful position to negotiate full time work or, you know, any upscaling of your role.
You know, Diane, you and I both are providing a lot of coaching and wisdom, you through the form of blogging and mine's face-to-face and also over the phone, nationally, internet. And I'm surprised at how many of my clients are stuck in the, no, I need to apply for a full-time job, and they're not willing to kind of jump out there and do freelance work. Any thoughts as to why you think that is?
Yes. I would say, in fact, there's both physical barriers and psychological barriers, okay? So fear is a huge horseman,
yeah.
You know? I mean, it not only drives the movie industry, everybody wants to see a horror flick, but the reality is people are often driven by their fears. So the idea of thinking you can freelance gets intimately intertwined with the idea of, well, where will I get my next
job?
You know, meet Hill. Instead of the moment, which is, I can jump on the train right here and ride it for 3 months. And as you said, it's, the test drive will be good for me as well as them. So I think people need to step back and actually look at their fears. And they need to get out of their comfort zone. I've written a lot about it on mojo40.com. In a small way, it can be exploring a skill or a tool you don't know. In a big way, it can be jumping in a new direction to retransition to something which is growing. You know, I give an example in one post. If you're an equity trader and the equity business is in the doldrums, and as far as you can see, it's going to be tamped down by the world economy, you know, maybe it's time to look at what else you can do. So just like people are afraid to become entrepreneurial, sometimes people are afraid to change their subject matter expertise and transition to what's growing. You have to see that's very psychological. But I also referred to physical. Remember back when
mm-hmm.
Here's the reality. Most people have responsibilities on their shoulders. You know, mortgage is a nut. You got to pay it. So sometimes there are real constraints to either temporarily dropping your income or being available the hours you need in an entrepreneurial venture. You know, we know when you work for yourself, you're hustling all the time.
And in fact, you're almost adopting this mantle of being terminally unemployed just so you can stay open and fresh to see possibilities coming to you. It's sort of like the artist who knows that the joy of creating his artwork, but he's got to worry about the other side of marketing it then to be able to then continue in this wonderful profession.
Right. But, you know, one thing I'd like to point out to everybody's benefit, the way trends and technology changes nowadays can enable you to be a freelancer in a way or an entrepreneur in a way that you might not a few years ago. Let me give you a couple examples. You know, I'm going to a vacation house later in the weekend, and I got to be on my computer. So you know what? I can take my mobile hotspot on my cell phone and be on my computer in a place that, you know, doesn't have internet access. Hey, nobody has to know I'm in my vacation home. You know, another example, if in the past you were trying to promote your book, let's say you were an author and you had to keep telling people to go on your website and buy it because you didn't have a credit card swiper, you know, now you can have Square in your pocket. It's a small plastic device, costs you nothing. You can run credit cards and debit cards after your presentation in front of 20 people at a local mm-hmm. Barnes & Noble. I mean, you can be making money in what used to be two separate events, one where you give a talk and the other where you get people to take an action. So, in fact, being an entrepreneur nowadays, Zara, in some ways involves the push to get current with trends and technology And that will eliminate some of the headaches that used to be part of being self-employed.
It's true, but I would, I'd also can venture to say for some of our listeners, particularly those of us who are digital immigrants, not digital natives, that the whole thought of sorting through all these gizmos, and, oh, by the way, once I get one of them understood, suddenly three more hit me, and how do I go next? So part of this idea of overcoming your fear also calls for you to figure out who you're going to go partner with, right? So that you can stay focused on really what your expertise is. Not that you can stay blind or stupid about that other, you know, electronic stuff that probably your three-year-old could do a better job with than you could, or your grandchild, but that idea of partnering along this journey, too.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's really important. Let's get back to basic principles, which is if you have a small company, whether you're a solopreneur, whether you're working with a partner, whether you're a small business of 13 individuals, you have to know what your core strengths are, what you really know. And if there are functions that need to be accomplished that are not your core strengths, you can hire outside. I mean, that's why people hire an accountant. You might need a consultant for a while. You might need a coach. I've written about, for instance, many companies these days are told, freshen up your website. You need to have a blog. Hey, but what if you're an invoice factoring company? Everybody's as a numbers quant, and nobody really wants to put a sentence together. No, there's a solution for you. In this case, you can hire a ghost blogger. You know, could be a me or anyone else who's a writer. That ghost blogger can get to know your business well enough to write a fresh blog every week and pull in traffic.
And what I might also suggest to you, though, chances are you have someone on your organization who would love to do that. In fact, they already write for their church newsletter or the PTA's fundraising efforts, and you didn't even know they had that skill that they could bring to the party to help the company.
Absolutely. You know, Zara, I've seen that a lot. Whereas the focus of someone's job, for example, is operations, but that person has a small yearning, Ken, to do something more creative, they may be thrilled to be able to cut out 2 hours a week and focus on a fresh blog post.
Isn't that true? We're speaking again with Diane Dolinsky-Pakar. She's based on the East Coast, but certainly her words of advice, thoughts, speaking engagements, and writing transcends where she's based or actually even the age group or career stage she's connected with. And her blog is mojo40.com. You know, one area you really hit strong on constantly, the constant thread, I would say, and consistent one, is the whole emphasis on networking and in networking in a contemporary way and not speed dating, seeing how many business cards you can hand out or how many people you can get on LinkedIn or Facebook, but truly that relationship building. Some of the tips and tricks to kind of whet everybody's appetite, Diane.
Okay. I have a post on my blog called 21 Fail-Proof Business Networking Steps. Many of these are things you wouldn't even think about, but you could do easily. And in fact, they come from my own experience. I'll give you a great example. There was a law firm in Midtown Manhattan. They were trying to fund startups in the area of mobile payments, okay? So here's what they figured out. They have a nice address. They have a nice conference room. It's underutilized after work. You know, they partnered with a LinkedIn group in the area of mobile payments. The LinkedIn group held once a month events, and somebody who ran that group did all the outreach to pull in people to attend a panel event about mobile payments. Now, do you see that the industry vertical for which they were hosting that group overlapped with their target market?
Perfect.
You know, you could do the same with a meetup group. In other words, you've got the space. Someone else is going to get out the live bodies. You bring the wine, the cheese, the crackers, and you schmooze. In other words, your market of prospects is there. But I can give you another one, which is a little bit more digital. Many people want to get familiar with C-suite executives of companies where the brand is strong, whether it's an insurance agency, whether it's a clothing retailer, or so forth. So nowadays, there are Twitter chats, Facebook chats that are live. These are very organized digital events. There's a hashtag which has already been selected, and through a series of live events, they keep using that hashtag again and again. These things are announced on the website. So listen to this scenario. Let's say a company runs a live Facebook chat, and you submit your questions beforehand, which is very, very common so that someone can prepare an answer.
Sure, exactly, okay. Yep.
Now, that company is scrutinizing the question and looking how to match the answer with the products or the services that they offer. Okay, it happened to me, a major women's clothing retailer, and I asked him, what should I wear to a Shakespeare festival, right?
Right.
I sent that question, it was read aloud, and it was answered on the live Facebook chat. That Facebook chat was recorded and posted to YouTube. Then on YouTube, I liked it, I shared it, and 2 days later, when I wrote to the woman who was running the Facebook chat,
mm-hmm.
not only knew my name and moniker, but she was more than happy to respond because, you know what, she could see that digitally I was helping them look successful. I not only sent in my question, but I shared it, and I retweeted it, and I liked it, blah, blah, blah. So the point is, evangelists are in demand. Anyone could be that evangelist.
And then thus have an opportunity to have a dialogue with this potential client for freelance work, or just who knows who she might know that could introduce you to other opportunities in the high-end retail fashion area.
Absolutely. You know, that's how things go. One leads to the next, leads to the next. I make a joke of it, but, you know, everybody knows that game Chutes and Ladders, where sometimes you go up 4 steps on a ladder, sometimes you come down a almost like a snow tube and you land 6 rows below.
Yeah, that's because you weren't supposed to go play on the ice skating rink or whatever. Oh, yeah, my kids catch me on that game all the time.
Okay, well, you know, life can be like that, especially networking. But the point is you're still on the board as long as you keep moving, keep making connections.
Well, and also for every time you slide back, sometimes that was a really important learning lesson so that you can move faster through the next sweep of possibilities, too.
Absolutely. You know, I'll give you a real good example of that. One time I raised my hand to do a job for a non-for-profit that was doing environmental advocacy door-to-door. You know, I wanted to see what that was about. I really lasted a total of 1 day. I mean, it was exhausting, absolutely exhausting. Everybody was in college. I was decades older. But I can tell you I learned an incredible amount from that 6-hour shift. And recently I was working on behalf of a client called Build the Bridge Now, NewYork.org. It's a coalition to lobby Washington for funds to build a very major bridge in the vicinity where I live.
That's the Tappan Zee Bridge. It is a major artery there in New England, yes.
Absolutely. So in this case, we were trying to get people to sign petitions. We were trying to basically spread the word among the business community and the residents why this particular proposal will meet our needs and, you know, what we should do next to get on board to petition Washington. I have to tell you, the most relevant job experience out of, you know, my whole many decade career was that 1 day of 6-hour canvassing. I learned a lot. So people should look at that. You're not failing. You're acquiring the know-how you need to pick yourself up, move on, and then reweave that know-how down the road into what you do well.
And in fact, many times it's some of those, like you say, those things that you find out you don't want to do that lead you to the right path forward. My story is not dissimilar. I select engineering at a time when it was converging with computer-aided design. I prior was going to decide to go to art school, but I love math and science. So I went off to engineering school, mechanical engineering design. My first summer internship was in a computer-aided design organization. Mind you, this was back in the 70s, so it was not nearly as schnazzy as it is today. And, you know, after about 6 weeks, I felt I was losing my eyesight. I really didn't kind of click with the kind of people that I worked with. However, it was in a department within the automotive business. Bingo, off to the races. I spent 13 plus very formative years of my career staying involved in automotive, basically on a first experience of a task I didn't want to do. So you're right, spot on, the idea of exploring and expanding. Well, Diane Dolinsky-Pekar, thank you so much again for contributing. Our listeners, it's www.mojo40.com. Sign up, track, follow her really insightful and timely blog information. And with a lot of chutzpah and fun in the mix, Diane, thank you so much for joining us today.
All my pleasure, Zara.
All right, we'll catch you next month and have fun.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580.
the Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.